Oh, it's such an honor, Danny, to be a part of this amazing podcast you're doing here. And it's just really cool to be talking about this book.
You know my work and you've given it a lot of thought, and I don't normally get such good questions, to be honest.
That was so fun.
Yeah, it sure was, especially the quiz. Thanks for preparing that for me.
Thank you for your wonderful questions.
Best with these things, just turn into a conversation.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. Yeah, you obviously got the book.
Good on you for fighting the good fight too.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you guys.
I love your enthusiasm. I just think it's a brilliant thing you're doing, a podcast about, you know, books, and you do a lot of great interviews, so I'm really honoured to be part of it.
I so enjoy listening to the podcast. I truly, I love it.
You're listening to Words and Nerds Podcast with Danny V.
Today I welcome author S.M. Matthews to discuss his very important novel, The Skinny Girl, a novel about domestic violence. We chat in depth about domestic violence, so it may be a trigger for some listeners. To learn more about the various groups and organisations that aid victims of domestic violence abuse, go to SM Matthews' link, www.theskinnygirl.info, or the Homicide Victims Support Group, www.hvsgnsw.org.au.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Steve, to talk about The Skinny Girl.
Thanks, Danny. Grateful for the opportunity.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about The Skinny Girl for a number of reasons. One, because you're a local author, and I think that's important to support our local authors in the area. And we're at Camden Library, so a shout out to the staff here for letting us use their room at the last minute. But I also think it's a really important issue because The Skinny Girl deals with domestic violence, and it's such an important issue, especially in our particular society.
Yeah, it's very relevant today and becoming more so, thank goodness, in the sense that there's more exposure about it. People are becoming more aware of it.
Now, the book was inspired by a real woman's experience and a diary that you and your wife found. Is that what compelled you to write this novel?
Yeah. Daisy, who's the principal character in the book, is a real person. And Diane had all her diaries and notes. And Diane just said to me one day, you've got to read these, see if you can build something around it. There's a story here, and Daisy wanted it told.
And it must have been so confronting, reading a diary, like someone's personal diary entries.
Yeah, it's enormously confronting. It really was. I cried. Mm. I don't mind admitting that. I cried quite a few times. Not so much because of what she did, or what happened to her, but because of the consequences, the loneliness that she felt. It really came out in her notes. Mm-hmm. She was surrounded by kids and siblings, and she worked and all that stuff, but she was the loneliest person I've ever come up against. Mm. It was amazing.
And that really came through as well in terms of, you know, the lack of family support she had and her children who eventually didn't have the best relationship with her. And it made me think that there must be many people in society who do experience these things with their family, and they feel trapped and alone, and that's why often they stay in these relationships.
It's very hard to leave, that's for sure, Danny. It's not only a dangerous thing to do. Statistically, the 2 weeks before somebody leaves a violent situation and the 2 weeks after when bad things mm-hmm. happen.
And it makes sense when you say that, but it wasn't until I read it in your book and I thought, that really makes sense, because although you're in danger constantly, the weeks leading up to it, if you told the person you're leaving, especially the weeks after, must be a very dangerous time.
Yeah. We've got thousands of statistics, and one of the things we learned from White Ribbon and the Homicide Victim Support Group was that I think it's 60% of domestic violence murders happen around that 4 weeks, 2 weeks or so before they leave, because the spouse gets to learn about it one way or another, mm-hmm. and then the 2 or 3 weeks afterwards.
Because of the content, and because it was a diary, and because it was a friend of your wife's, was this something that made it difficult or a challenge to write?
No. I managed to separate myself from it emotionally. I wanted to say something. And I found I said it through the characters. And I know it's come out well because of the feedback we get.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted people to really feel that they were Daisy, and I wanted them to get the right message. And for me to get that message over, I had to do the narrative as I did. That's what I felt.
Mm-hmm. And talking about characters, for me, Jeff, he actually came very close to home for me, because sometimes it isn't the black eye, it isn't the evidence, so to speak, of domestic violence when people talk about it.
Yeah, the experts tell us that it's harder to recover from the psychological trauma than it is from a black eye.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that is, but we've talked to psychologists as well. There's at the end of the book, there's a message in there from Kate Blancy, who's a psychologist, and she helped us a lot with the structure of the book and the building of the characters to make sure they were legit.
Mm-hmm.
And she told us that it's very difficult in these situations, and a lot of the time the victims don't even know they're victims.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's a very slow process.
And these men, I mean, I didn't find Jeff particularly charming, but these men can are often initially quite charming and charismatic, and that's the problem, isn't it? Because they don't start out abusing, or you probably wouldn't pursue the relationship. They start off as quite these charismatic people who draw you in.
That's what happens at the end of the day. But we've learned there's two types of narcissists.
Mm-hmm.
The first type is the wolf in sheep's clothing, mm-hmm. and that's the one you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll give you flowers and take you out to dinner and all that sort of stuff. The other type is more confronting, and it's I am what I am, take me as I am, mm-hmm. take or leave it, I'm a man's man, you know.
And that then leads us to that whole idea of misogyny, doesn't it? And that, you know, you can't just say that to a person, I'm just going to continue doing everything that I did before I met you, because that's not what true relationships are about.
No, it's not. I wanted Jeff to be a little bit anonymous in the mm-hmm. story. So I wanted him to be in the background, and you'd see a little snippet of him here and there. But the reason I wanted it that way is because I don't believe there's any excuse for it.
Yeah, no, I agree, totally.
And as an author, it's easy to build in some sympathy for the protagonist in a situation like this. And in fact, we were doing a talk at I can't remember which library, and a lady was there who was a prison visitor, and she'd met men who had killed their wives or girlfriends, whatever, and she was quite sympathetic towards them,
mm-hmm.
Which Diane and I found difficult to grasp that, because at the end of the day, if someone's going to hit you, Danny, if your husband's going to hit you, that's a decision he makes.
Yeah, absolutely.
It might be at a single moment in time, it might happen. But it is a decision that he makes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a choice, either to hit you or not hit you, or hurt you or not hurt you.
And I'm a great believer as well, and I mean, we've all suffered different things to varying degrees in our lives, but there is a point where you need to be an adult and say, you know what, this has happened to me and it sucks and it's terrible, but I'm going to take responsibility for who I am.
Yeah, yeah. And we're not encouraged to do that nowadays, though, are we? The law doesn't even encourage us to do that.
I agree.
Mm. As I say, I deliberately left
which is important.
Jeff until the end.
Yeah.
And there's the scene with the shower. But the end was very much in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. I left it open.
As a reader, I was conflicted too. Before I got to the end, I thought to myself, obviously there's two possible outcomes, you know, at its very base level. And I thought the first one is that he's going to kill her. As statistics show, this happens, you know, once a week in our country. She's a terrible statistic, or she's going to be able to leave. And it was interesting because I thought, either way, you're not wrong or you're not right, because it happens once a week in our country, which is just, I can't even fathom that in my brain. I know I hear it all the time, but I still find it very difficult to accept and understand.
Mm.
But then I thought, wouldn't it be great, because we follow Daisy's story, that she does get out? So I think you're right in saying that there was no ending that was preferable, because both of them can be true.
Yeah, very much. Very much.
I think it's interesting, and I've spoken to a lot of authors about readers being confronted, and this is a conversation I particularly had with Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed, who wrote The Lebs, which is a very, you know, and I don't use confronting by any means as a negative thing. I think it's actually good for people to be confronted, because it's real, you know. And something that Dr. Michael Muhammad Ahmed said to me was, well, so what if the reader is confronted? Because you can be confronted in the safety of your own home and not having to go through that. And this happened, you know, he was talking about the treatment of the Lebanese community, which is obviously still very relevant within our society. But it's the same with domestic violence. Whether you want a happy ending or not, this is real. And if you're confronted, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing, because that's how we change and how we realise that there's truth in stories and terrible things do happen. And how can we move forward and change these awful statistics unless we are confronted?
Yeah, no, you're dead right. That's something that really interests me, the confrontational side of it. Mm. And I want to write books that are going to shake readers, shake them up a little bit, make them think.
But I think there are books that, or literature, art, music, that do both. You know, one, and I'm very aware that I love reading, you know, those books that just entertain me and I know it's going to be a happy ending. It's kind of like a rom-com. Great. Enjoy it. Fantastic. But there is definitely also room for those books that help change us. I always put books into three categories: books I enjoy, books that I love, and books that change you after you've read it. You know, and I think that's really important to have those confronting books that you think at the end, this is not okay, what can I do about it? Whether that's educating your son or your daughter or yourselves, or looking out for your friend, or trying to, you know, raise awareness or funding or whatever. You know, there's something that all of us can do.
Yeah, that's nice to hear that, because that's what we're trying to do exactly with this book. Mm-hmm. We're doing it. People are writing to us saying, you know, can I get involved somewhere, or you know, they're just spilling their souls out. We were at a function in Wollongong a while ago, and this dear old lady came up to us at the end on a walking stick, and she was crying, and she said her husband had died 2 months before, and so we consoled her and had a little chat with her, and I said, oh, I'm sorry you're so upset about that, that's awful. And she said, no, I'm not as upset about him dying as I am about what's been released with his death. And what was released was the memories of her childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been sexually abused, emotionally, everything. And she was a dear soul. And she'd met this nice fellow who kept her safe for 60 years in their marriage. And she'd kept a lid on it.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd been seeing a psychologist on and off. And then she read The Skinny Girl, and it coincided with her husband's death, and it's all just popped out like a firework.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very sad, but she was grateful, and she said the psychologist that she's seen said to her, it's a good thing, let's get it out now. Mm-hmm. It had to come out sometime, so let's deal with it.
Yeah.
But it was sad as well to see her like that. Absolutely. It was very sad.
It's funny how we can do that, isn't it? As human beings, we can kind of put a band-aid on it, but it always comes back, doesn't it? Always comes back, just no matter how 60 years this poor woman has lived with it.
Mm.
But it always comes back to haunt us, doesn't it? Mm.
She was gorgeous. I could have taken her home. She was our nana.
And that must be the great thing about this book, beyond anything else, is hearing these stories and knowing that you really are resonating with people.
Yeah, it is. It's a great feeling, and it was part of what we wanted to achieve anyway, Danny. And Diane said we really should put our money where our mouth is with this. So that's why we decided to donate all the royalties and all the income that we get from it. In perpetuity, it's donated to organisations that help.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And that's important too, because it does then show the authenticity of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, and it's a feel-good thing for us as well.
And it's interesting, because I guess that's what I've tried to do with this podcast as well. You know, we talk about domestic violence, and we talk about anxiety and depression and all those things, because they're such important parts of our society. And if, you know, one person who listens to the podcast can get help or help someone else or do something in a positive way, I mean, isn't that the whole point of literature and art?
Yeah, it makes it justified, doesn't it? Just one person.
Yeah.
It would be lovely.
I just looked at some statistics this week, Australian statistics, and we talked about one woman a week is murdered by a current or former partner. One in three Australian women have experienced physical violence since the age of 15. One in five Australian women has experienced sexual violence. And it just goes on and on. And it's just so horrifying to think, in a time, I don't know, it's so naive to think that humanity changes, but I don't expect you to have the answer. But what else can we do to change these statistics?
Yeah. Oh, gosh, that's such a big question, Danny, isn't it? You know, we've talked to the police minister about a lot of this stuff, and he was telling us that he feels the way towards change is through the youngest generation that you can grab.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, when your kids are playing backyard cricket, you don't say to your little boy, oh, mate, you threw that like a girl, come on, hit it, whack it. You know, you're a man up, and all that sort of stuff. It starts there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's a case of boundaries and respect. And the only way, really, is you've got to catch a generation and build from there. Mm-hmm. We can't mend this fractured situation that we're in now, sadly.
I think you're so right. And, you know, having little children, I have this conversation with people all the time, and, you know, my husband and I have made such an effort to not do those things, even with consent. And it might sound silly, them being little, but if you're tickling your sister or your brother and they say no, you stop. You know, even if there was fun had before. And it's just that learning about consent and masculinity. And, you know, my son, there was a superhero party and he wanted to go as My Little Pony. And I just thought the most wonderful thing was I came downstairs and my husband was making him a pink unicorn horn with glitter. And he goes, how's this? I'm like, perfect.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. I mean, if your kid wants to be a My Little Pony instead of Batman, well, who cares?
That's right. Right. That's right, yeah. But it has to start at that generation, yeah, Danny. It has to. But he doesn't see it as abuse.
Mm.
Someone said to me the other day that, because I'm saying in the book that nobody, and in my talks I say, that nobody saw that Daisy was being abused. Mm. Nobody. And this lady picked me up and said, oh yeah, but his mate Greg did. And I said, no, Greg doesn't see it as abuse and Jeff doesn't see it as abuse. Yeah. I mean, it's pure control.
Yeah.
Everybody who's read the book so far that has been in some kind of abusive situation has seen themselves in the book.
Now, there's a real power shift, her gaining independence and power, and I just thought that was such a positive way to see Daisy as well, that you can have lack of family support, you can have the lack of support from your own children, but there's always, always a way out. It's hard. I'm not trying to undermine that. It's bloody hard, but there is always a way out, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah, there is. The sad thing is the victim has to find that way out, Danny. They have to search for it and they have to find it. So they need a support system behind them. And one of the things we say to people when we close our talks, when we go to signings or library visits, we close it by saying that everybody in the room is responsible for making changes.
Mm-hmm.
You stand up, because that could be your mum, your daughter, your nan, anybody. Stand up and be accountable for it. It's your responsibility.
And that goes with everything, doesn't it? I mean, you just have to look at what's happening in the media currently, and it doesn't matter when we release this, because there'll always be something happening in the media. Yeah. But about that standing up, and even if it's hard, and even if you're scared, that's what we have to do to be better human beings, isn't it? We do have to stand up against it, and we have to call it out and help people who need help.
Yeah, I think
so. It sounds very easy, but, you know, we need to move towards that, because it's not easy.
No. But you're right, though. I mean, that's what we have to do. I mean, we've got all this information and education today, haven't we?
Mm.
Human beings have never had so many opportunities as we have now for gathering information, for learning, and there's no excuse for not using that properly and making ourselves better people.
That's right. As well as with Daisy, it must add so much complexity to a person in this relationship who have children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you then, I mean, it's different per situation, but, you know, if you have little children, and that's why we need to tell people and inform people that there is support out there. And that's what Daisy didn't even know until that's she right. found out that there are people that can help you and make you safe.
Yeah.
It's not a hopeless situation, and you're not on your own.
Mm. Yeah, that's true, but you've touched on something there that we get a lot of feedback on from people, is the aspect of children in an abusive relationship. And most people are of the opinion that the kids will feel empathy with the victim, and in this case we're talking of a mother.
Yeah.
But some of these narcissistic men are very, very clever in their grooming of their children.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Daisy is abused in the book, she's abused by her children, is a reality that actually happened to the real Daisy and continues to this day.
And that was something that really surprised me about the book. and I was unfamiliar with until I'd read it, because I thought, wow, that grooming and that manipulation, and then that, you know, kind of pack mentality of, well, you must be wrong because no one else can see it. You know, your own daughters can't see it. And that was upsetting, but also very surprising.
Yeah, yeah. And in real life, again, Daisy has been confronted with that from her family. Mm. You know, you looked all right to us. You were always smiling when you came to our house. What's up with you? We truly feel the message in this book, both for victims and perpetrators, is so relevant and so significant that it makes the book important in this point in time. And so we're trying really hard to take advantage of that and get the word out.
Yeah. And that's what I think of too, you know, and that's why I wanted to, when I heard about this book on Facebook and then I met you at a signing, and then when I read the book, I thought it is a really important book. And that's, I try and do that. I love literature, but I love literature the most that has the potential to change you for the better, you know, that has a social conscience, because we can all be entertained, and entertainment is important, art is important, but isn't it great when art can be important in other ways as well?
Yeah, yeah. The State Attorney General's got a copy of the book, and he issued a statement of support for us and gave us permission to use it. The Police Minister, Troy Grant, he actually launched the book, as you're aware, and him and his wife have read it and had an in-depth understanding of it when we met them. I was very impressed by that.
And you met Mary Custis, who plays Effie, I saw the other day. How did that come about?
She's a friend of a lady who helped us with a lot of the marketing locally.
I think it's just so close to our heart. I mean, I would think that there's not many people out there who haven't experienced this or don't know someone who experienced this. So I think it's very close to everyone's heart, or we don't want their children to experience this, you know, so I think it's very close. Now, we talked about the diary being part of the research. Tell us how else the research came about. And now we're going to hear from Di, Steve's wife.
Living and growing in the area, talking to other mums at the school gate, and stories you'd hear.
So real life stories.
Real life stories.
Wow. And were people quite willing to share their real life stories with you?
Yeah, they probably didn't realise I was going to use it later, neither did I.
They never befriend a writer.
We've changed it anyway, it's all in fiction now. So it won't be, they can't see themselves in it.
Yeah.
Or maybe they will.
Di's research wasn't on a formal basis, so she didn't sit down with people and have a list of questions.
Yeah.
In fact, we tried to do that with one lady who we love very much, and she said, yeah, I'll meet you, and I sent her a couple of chapters so she got an idea of the style of the book and what it was all about. And so we met her in a coffee shop, and she just pushed the papers back across the table and started crying and said, I can't talk about it. And that was it. That was the research from her. But it spoke volumes to us.
Absolutely. Yeah,
Diane said, you know, wasn't that fantastic? Look how deep it scarred her.
And I don't think it ever really goes away. I mean, I think you always move on from it. Well, hopefully you can move on from it. But it's always something there. And I guess when you talk about it, or you can't talk about it, that speaks volumes, doesn't it?
It's even just talking to women. Like when you go to the hairdressers or the physio or something, and they tell you, you know, you just have a chat and they talk and you think, whoa, okay.
And it's funny because when you talk about it, I feel like you have more power over it, you know, rather than it just living inside yourself. And it's interesting that when you start talking about this, then you hear other people who have experienced the same and have never talked about it before. And you just think, this is an epidemic, you know, and people, and isn't it great if we can start these conversations, because people know they're not alone. It's not their fault. It's just something that has happened to them, and that we need to help them get out of that. So I think those conversations are so important. Yeah. And as a mother, I think you're always trying to make decisions on a daily basis of what's best for your children. You don't always get it right. You know, it's so hard when you've got this added complexity. It's almost impossible, isn't it?
It is. And Daisy sheltered her kids all the time, and so they didn't see the other side of it. They only saw her dad's side. Well, he was saying, oh, I don't know what's wrong with your mother, and all this sort of stuff. And the kids, that's how he groomed them.
And kids are smart, though. Kids, they pick up on stuff. You know, obviously they were groomed, but sometimes, you know, kids will come up to you and you're like, how do you know that? Who told you this? How did you hear this? You know, they're very astute.
If it's the woman that is being abused, it changes her ability to mother her children. And I've heard that. I've read it a couple of times. Yeah, so she changes, and then the kids see her one way, and then when she leaves, she's a different person.
Because it's that self-perception and it's that deniability. It's trying to shelter your children. Yeah, and, you know, it's very hard, as we know, being a parent, to even, you know, take care of yourself. You know, when you're in the midst of all the newborns and you forget, I haven't washed my hair in 8 days. Yeah. You know, it's that self-care and that self-preservation must be escalated to such a high degree when you're in this type of relationship as well.
Yeah. Mm. Daisy's still receiving help from Kate, and that's 12, 13 years, something like that. She's been out of the marriage.
Yep.
She's still receiving help.
And I'd be very interested to see how the children go, because when she was speaking to a character in the book, she said that, you know, this is trauma for the kids. And she was very surprised, going, what are you talking about? This is trauma for the kids that takes them so long to get over, or possibly they will never recover from. This talk has been so rich, and we've talked about so many different things and so many important issues. And I thank you so much, Steve and Di, for coming and chatting about such an important issue. I mean, I know I've spoken to you before, Steve, but I know, Di, you've been such an important part in the background of this novel too. So it's lovely to have you both here. And look, domestic violence is something that, like we said, we're all impacted by. And even if it hasn't been us or we don't know someone, the statistics in our country are so terrifying that we are all in it. You know, we are all in it. And like you said, we have to try and hope that Daisy's resilience and courage inspires others to recognise if they're in a situation or if a friend's in a situation, and to call it out, to speak up, and to help people not be alone. So I hope literature, I hope this podcast can help people know that they do deserve better, and that there is a way out.
Yeah, thank you, Danny. It's great to have the opportunity. Seriously, thank you very much.